No one wants to feel unwell or feel like there's a better way of living, but it's just out of reach. When it comes to your health, you need better solutions, not Band-Aids. Wholist is here for you.
Hello, hello, Curate Your Health. This is Dr. Heather Hammerstedt. I'm an emergency physician, lifestyle medicine physician. Most importantly, my labor of love is Wholist, where we help women really figure out their mindset around food and their body positivity and figuring out how to unprocess their food, their body, and their mind to get to the body and mind that they've been wanting. I've been so thankful to have so many coaches along this journey with me, one of whom is here today, Dr. Anna Blake. She was initially a Wholist client and is now a physician life coach, as lots of other roles that she plays: mother, sister, rural family physician, obstacle course racer, and as a life coach at the Anti-Fragile Female MD as well. So she'll tell us more about that. She also is a mindset coach with us here at Wholist, really helping people figure out how to rewire their thoughts and their brain around this issue of using food. So welcome, Anna.
Thank you, Heather. I am so excited to be here. I'm very grateful to you for inviting me. This is my first time being on a podcast ever, so I'm super excited about it. But also, I just want to thank you really from the bottom of my heart, because I think probably most people don't really realize how awesome Heather is, and she has gone above and beyond for me. I'm literally here as a coach right now because Heather was so supportive to me, and she helped me set some amazing goals when I became a Wholist client. And they were so much more than just about losing weight and wanting to, have a healthier relationship with food. And Heather has been an awesome mentor to me as I grew in the coaching world. And so it's just really come full circle. And so I'm stoked to be here.
Oh, thank you. You're going to make me cry. All right.
I didn't forewarn her that I was going to tell her all this. But I'll tell you guys a little bit about me. Heather gave me a lovely introduction there. Thank you. It was more than I was expecting. So I prepared a little bit to tell you guys about me. But so I have a nearly 50-pound weight loss success story. And, you know, Wholist has really helped me big time be in a season of maintenance. And, you know, I definitely credit everything that I've learned from Wholist to be there at this point in time for me. And so that's been amazing, because, you know, it's funny how I think oftentimes we're so excited about weight loss, but one of the best things about the Wholist lifestyle is the sustainability of this piece with our weight, right? And it's helped me to get back to a sport that I love, which Heather mentioned, obstacle course racing. Unfortunately, COVID had other plans for us this year, right. So we haven't been on a race course, but it was supposed to be in the works. So other stuff about me: I'm a rural family doctor in Canada. I'm the only Canadian member of the Wholist team. I like to represent with my cute little Canadian accent. Heather goes. And as Heather mentioned, I'm a life coach. So I'm a mindset coach at Wholist, which is where I help women manage the common mind traps that create overeating and over-desiring of food. But I really, as I kind of alluded to, have this second transformation story, which very much was mentally for me in terms of stepping into who I wanted to show up as in the world and who I wanted to be. And that's what has gotten me into this coaching world. I recovered from significant burnout, suicidal ideation, just really a lot of awful stuff was going on in my life at the time that I met Heather. And so Wholist and doing life coaching has helped me really navigate that road and get to a point where I am just in the best place of my life and I'm doing the most amazing work. And so the other hat that I wear is having my own business called the Anti-Fragile Female MD, where I'm focused on helping overwhelmed and burned out doctors, very much who I was last fall, overcome the common female MD mind traps. Stuff like self-doubt, fear of failure, perfectionism, imposter syndrome. And yeah, just, I do this because I think as female physicians, we work super hard to get this life. And I love seeing women love the life that we worked our asses off for. So
yeah, totally.
So that's basically my background. So where do you want to go with this, Heather?
Well, you know, so much of what we do with Holist is not necessarily about the actual what of eating, right? I mean, a lot of it is, right? We have our weight coaches that talk about what and when of eating and experimenting with each person to really dial it in and figure out what your plate should look like. But more importantly, you know, so many of us have been stuck for decades often thinking certain things about our bodies or thinking things about how we use food, you know, rewarding ourselves or punishing ourselves with food, pushing our voice down with food. I just had a great podcast interview that'll probably be airing soon as well with Nicole Moline. And we talked about how we need to change the narrative around how we present ourselves to the world to gain weight in the world, right? To hold our space and our, you know, and our presence in the world. And we don't often do that as women, I think, in whether that's been bred into us or whether it's intuitively. And so, you know, the why of eating, of what we're doing, what we're choosing to do is essential work for people to make sustainable health changes, but also to really show up for themselves and carry that weight. So I know this is what you love to talk to our clients about. And so I just wanted to hear from you, you know, what are these like really common mindset issues that our clients have, that most women have, that you work through? And we'll just do some chatting and, you know, hopefully bring some people some light to the issue.
Totally. Yeah. I just got off a call with a client literally before I jumped on this call with you, a Holist client who totally gave me a prime example of this. And I think it's really, you know, I think we're trained in our Western society to over desire food and to use food as a buffer for negative emotion. And I think that that's when we can learn how that shows up for us in our life. I think that's the secret sauce that you really have incorporated into this program. And I think it's the missing link as to why so many diets fail, is I think we often rely on willpower. Now, I like to kind of preface this conversation with something that a friend of mine, who is another physician coach, Melanie Argo, but she said to me at one point in time, she said, it was never about the food. And I really love this because I think that it's in fact true. You know, I think the food is available there as a source of pleasure for us to kind of consume as fuel, but we have kind of massaged it into this situation where we use food as a way of avoiding feeling a lot of things. And I think we're very much encouraged to do this in our society, and that this is why food has become a problem for so many people. So I think about it like this, like, most people who have a problem with weight have a problem with either one or the other or both of these two things, over desire or buffering with food, which is trying to avoid an emotion by consuming a food that makes us feel good. And one of the, you know, you'll hear a lot of mindset coaches and weight loss talk about these things, but one of the different things that I like to kind of hone in on a little bit is this, and this has made a big helped my clients to make big progress, I should say, is when we talk about the idea of you can't hate yourself to your ideal weight. And I think this really goes back to what you were saying before about stepping into your weight in the world, is I think what it comes down to is that so many times when we experience doubt or we experience fear, we experience failure, and this is really what I deal with a lot of female physicians when I'm doing coaching on the overwhelm and the burnout piece, is that we get into this state where we believe that there's something wrong with us and we're never going to get to where we want to go. And, you know, I don't know why I can't believe in myself. I don't know why I can't hit my weight loss goal. I'm so organized in, you know, A, B, C, D, E, other areas of my life. Exactly. How come I can't just get this thing in my control, right? The problem with all of that language is that it turns our human brain into, I talk to my clients a lot about it, it's as if you're wearing a pair of glasses, but the pair of glasses you're wearing is like a very negative, narrow filter. Like we get tunnel vision, right? And the only thing we can see are problems because that's how the human brain evolved. And so if we get to this point where we can take off the glasses and we can kind of change the lens with which we filter the world, we can put on a different pair of glasses of one where we're going to love ourselves to our ideal weight, or we're going to love ourselves to whatever goal we're trying to achieve, then we really start to move towards achieving and fulfilling where we want to go. I share this experience often. Before I had my daughter, I weighed like in the high 140s, low 150s. I was very fit. I had a lot of muscle and I was, you know, running regularly 26 kilometers. But I always hated my body. I did not love the body I had. I always thought I needed to be something different in order for me to feel that positive emotion about my body. It was not fit enough. It was never where I wanted it to be. Throughout my journey of having a baby, I gained 70 pounds and then I've lost close to 50 of them now. I still have 20 pounds to lose, but I feel totally differently about my body now than I did back then. I tell my husband sometimes, like, I'm never going to have a weight problem ever again in my life because I understand now that you cannot hate yourself to your ideal weight, that the best tool for progress forward is belief in yourself. It's the confidence that you can achieve this. It's the positive outlook. It's the recognizing that my body is strong. It's recognizing that my body is capable. It's recognizing that my body made a baby and fed it for a very long time. It's recognizing that there is always something about my body that I can find to love, and that when I'm in the place where I love my body, I make better choices about what I'm going to fuel it with.
Yeah, totally. I think that's really important. The we only make good choices when we are feeling good, right? Like, it's very hard to make good choices on moving your body and how your thoughts are and what you're putting in your body when you're feeling at a baseline negativity. And so I think that that's really very hard to do sometimes, but very important, even if it's just finding like one part of you that you love, right? Like your nose, your shoulders, you know, something like that to love and to glom onto, because that is what you're choosing is your body. You're choosing your future. You're choosing to make yourself as healthy as possible. This is not about a number on the scale. It's about health, and it's about resilience, and it's about strength, and it's about, you know, creating your best health future so that you can fight off things that are unexpected as we're going through right now.
Totally. I love to play around in my mind, and Heather may scold me for saying this, but I'm a mindset coach at Holis. So I love to play around with this phrase that the scale is not my master, right? Like, my brain and me as a watcher of my brain, what I tell my brain to think, that really is how I master all of my experience of the world. And so I can choose to filter whatever the situation is on the scale. Another example I'll give you with the scale. While I was in Holist, the very first time I broke the 180-pound threshold, I'd had this goal set that I was going to do that about 8 months before I started Holist. So it felt like it was a very long time coming. I break the 180-pound threshold. I'm so excited to see 179 pounds. Then I hit a plateau of 179 pounds for about 12 weeks straight. So I bet you can believe what I was thinking about 179 pounds right by the end of the 12-week plateau, right? I was elated about it a number of weeks before. And then I hit this plateau and I was just like, this is awful. Like, I'm failing everything, and all the scale is just a testament to why I'm not having success. All the while, my relationship with food was improving. I was not restricting. I was allowing urges. I was doing all of these things that were improving my relationship with food. I remember you showing me a post that I had written in the group, Heather, where you had shown me that I was believing that this was the easiest transition I had ever made in my life to attempt to lose weight because I didn't have to weigh or measure or restrict or, you know, tell myself that I'm not allowed to have certain things. It was so different for me to not have to do that calorie counting piece, all of that. But yet here I was stuck at this plateau. But this leads me to one of my favorite points to talk to people about when it comes to mindset around weight loss. It's this: reaching a sustainable weight or your goal weight or your ideal weight, whatever you want to call it, it's not a race. It does not have to be a race. So many people have struggled with their weight, and so then they seek out like sexy fad diets, whatever. They just do massive restrictions so that they're going to try to hit a goal. And then what happens? They rebound, right? The yo-yo. And so I like to think about it as this. I ask this, what I think is a very poignant, if I'm going to toot my own horn here for a second, but a very poignant question about weight loss. It's like this. If it took you multiple years to get to this point, right, and you've struggled with a yo-yo weight for years, you know, you haven't been able to maintain weight loss, would you be willing to put in the steady work for, say, 2 years? If you knew at the end of the line you were never going to have a problem with your weight ever again, right? You were going to never have to think obsessively about what you were going to eat. You were never going to feel deprived. You were going to be in a place where weight was just easy for you and you just lived a healthy life. Food was just fuel for you, right? If you wanted to enjoy something, you could, but you never felt out of control about it. Most people say yes, they would do that. But then when the going gets tough, when we're on a weight loss plan or we don't see the scale going in the direction we want to see it, we're like, the plan is not working. I'm ready to give up. So I remind people that this is part of the process. This is the way it's supposed to happen. It's not sexy and fast and faddish. And that's a sign that you're on this path to lifelong health, right? When it doesn't feel like that. It takes time really to practice this neuroplasticity and to retrain our brains. And so that's where this all comes in, is it's giving ourselves the time to do the work that we need so that we get the long lasting results that we want.
Yeah, totally. When you were telling that story about your plateau, I remember talking to you during that time and saying, you're not fueling your body for weight loss, you're fueling your mind. And I think that is something that we need to keep in mind when we're making these big changes, is like, what is the purpose of all of this? The purpose of it is that we want that strong, healthy body that's going to carry us through, but we also need to fuel our brain to be able to make these choices in a sustainable way and understand, you know, the things that you're talking about in terms of that long-term vision and why the choices that you're making on a daily basis are going to get you there or not get you there.
Totally. And yeah, you know, I think a lot of this, a lot of the things that I see people struggling with when it comes to mindset in the weight loss world is self-loathing and self-doubt, right? And these are kind of the two enemies of weight loss, is as soon as we start to make it mean that the scale's not moving exactly the way we want it to move, it means that we deserve hatred, loathing, these horrible emotions that we feel towards ourselves, right? Or we doubt, like, here I go again, I'm not capable of doing this, I have failed this before. What we're not acknowledging is the fact that the road to success is typically filled with many, many, many failures, but we either get the result we want or that we get the lesson we need, right? And so if we can interpret each of those failures as, what's the lesson I need? Where do I need to pivot? Where do I need to go forward? Then we can stay on our overall path, like the overall big trajectory, right? It's not that these little small, it's like the small battles, but you can lose a few small battles and still win the war kind of thing.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, no, I mean, we talk about this, right, when we're, you know, talking with business mentors and things like that, is that, like, you know, you never know which step is going to be the step that gets you to success, right? You just have to keep making the steps. And sometimes the steps are sideways and sometimes they're forwards and sometimes they're backwards, but you don't know which direction it's in until it's happened. And so sometimes you have to take imperfect action, right? And you know, that's the same with this, is that, like, you know, if you want to make sustainable health changes, regardless of what that is, it's a process, and it's a process that is going to look a little bit different for you than it's going to look for me. And that's why really personalizing this and digging in and figuring out and experimenting, you know, like, it really is an experiment, right? Like, what and when should I be eating? Like, what do I need to be thinking about why I'm on this process? What is my why, right? That's going to be different for all of us. And you're going to experiment and disprove your hypothesis, or prove it and then make a new experiment and try again. And I think that as long as people come in understanding that it's, you know, it's not a race, and that it is hard work, and that sometimes you're going to fluctuate in ways that aren't exactly what you want, but as long as you're doing the work, it's going to get you where you need to go.
Totally. This is actually a perfect point for me to bring up something else that I really love to teach around mindset and food and weight loss. And so I think about it like this. When it comes to a protocol, which is very different than a diet, right? A protocol is something that we're choosing for ourselves, that this is the way I'm going to eat for a period of time. It's not about weighing and measuring and counting. It's just, this is how I'm going to eat for a time. I think about it like this. The very first question we need to ask ourselves when we're doing, just like Heather was saying, this experiment of, like, did this work or not, is we need to ask ourselves this question: did I follow the protocol? And if I didn't follow the protocol, if the answer to that is no, then we need to go to our thoughts. We need to go to our mindset and figure out, like, what isn't working for me right now that's keeping me from following the protocol? And can I pivot there first? Then I say, go back to your protocol with that new mindset. Apply it for 2 weeks. If you get to the point that you've followed your protocol for 2 weeks and you're still on a plateau as far as your weight goes, then by all means, start to tweak your protocol a little bit, right? But it takes the mindset piece, because so often we look at our protocol and we're like, protocol doesn't work. Like, the whatever I'm following doesn't work, but we're not actually following it. So if we can figure that part out, then we can start to tweak what we're doing as far as our nutrition. And that's how we can modify for those individual variations that you were talking about, Heather.
Yep, totally. Awesome. I love that.
It's super, super fun. Okay, so I would be remiss to be talking about mindset and food if I didn't talk about embracing discomfort. Whenever I meet with my clients, the very first time I sit down and I meet with them, I was trained at the Life Coach School, where a number of other of holist coaches were trained. And we use this system called the self-coaching model. And so the very first thing I do is I sit down with clients and I create, what is the model? What is the circumstance, which is your current weight? What is your thought about your current weight that's fueling whatever emotion is causing you to take the actions that are keeping you, like, stuck at that weight or creating a situation where you're gaining weight? So we basically look at what's going on now in your brain. And then we take and we look at what they weigh now. And we look at the result, which is how much weight they're hoping to lose at the end of the holist program. Then what we do is we go backwards through that model. So we decide, what actions are you going to need to take to successfully follow through on this? And then I ask my clients, what emotions are you going to need to feel to do the actions? It's fascinating, because people always come up with stuff like determined and motivated and hopeful and happy and a variety of things. And then I ask them, do you think you're going to need to be uncomfortable sometimes? And people just kind of look at me for a minute, and then inevitably, like, the head starts to nod, right? But we never think about how embracing comfort when we're growing and we're changing and we're moving through life, how that is such a powerful skill, right? It's like we see discomfort as like a ding, ding, ding bell in our mind that something has gone wrong, because our primitive brain jumps in there and like our fight or flight kicks in and we're like, oh, this isn't right because I don't feel good about this right now. We all want to just walk into a weight loss program and feel amazing right from day one in the get-go, right? And so, or we want to step on that scale, and every time we step on that scale, we want to feel amazing. But if we can embrace the concept of discomfort being the currency of our dreams, being the road to success, we can have urges for food. We can have situations where we normally would have buffered a negative emotion with a food. Those can come up and we can allow the urge to be there. We can just welcome it and say, it's fine. My primitive brain is giving me an urge to consume this food because I'm used to avoiding this emotion with this food. But instead, I'm going to allow this to be here. I'm going to process whatever negative emotion I have to feel. I'm going to embrace the fact that I'm experiencing discomfort right now. Our brain is just freaking out. Normal, totally normal. It's just freaking out to try to protect us, but it's a thought error. It's counterproductive. And so when we can start to look at it this way, we can realize that yes, I'm going to need to feel a little bit uncomfortable on the journey, but I'm 100% in control here. I'm choosing this so that I can move to a place where I no longer have this kind of relationship with food.
Yeah, I think there's two really important points in that conversation. One is that feelings were not meant to always be positive. It's just, they are what they are. And secondly, change doesn't happen when you're comfortable. It just doesn't. So I think if we can take those two points away from that and just realize that the spectrum of emotion, to include discomfort and to include anger and to include dissatisfaction or sadness, those are all normal parts of us. And telling ourselves that we have to always feel neutral or positive just isn't part of life. It's just not realistic, and you're not doing anything wrong by feeling those things. And in fact, when you respond to those feelings by actually processing them and feeling them and working with them and trying to learn what it's trying to teach you, you're going to succeed out of that situation 100 times better than pushing it down with food or pushing it down with alcohol or pushing it down with whatever it is that you're pushing it down with. Yeah, I think that's a big key. Thank you for that.
Yeah, the last client I had actually alluded to this at the beginning, and then I never really jumped into it because I thought it would fit in later on in our chat. But the last client I got off the call with, she has a long-standing pattern of buffering anxiety with alcohol. And so her brain tells her, like, I feel anxiety and I need to drink. It's fascinating because, as I pointed out to her today, her pattern of drinking over the years was to drink more and more and more and more. And I showed her how it's because we think the alcohol is going to eliminate the negative emotion completely. We think we can just avoid it, jump over it, tuck it in the closet, close the door, and pretend it's not there. But what happens is it works very temporarily while we consume the food that gives us the dopamine hit in our brain, creates the pleasure, but eventually that wears off. And then we need to have another drink, and then we need to have another drink and another drink. And the next thing we know, we're drinking six drinks every night in order to get to the same point where we didn't feel that emotion anymore. It's another form of thought error, really, that we think that the food actually makes it go away, but all it does is it just temporarily allows us to avoid facing what we have to feel. It almost invariably comes back because it's 100% created by our thoughts and the way we're thinking about things. So what my client did was she said to herself this week, why can't I just not do this anymore? I'm going to just tell myself I'm not having any alcohol for a week. She had no recognition of this pattern of buffering and why she felt like she needed to consume the alcohol. She just decided she wasn't going to do it. So she set in place a restriction. She decided to apply her willpower to drinking. But what ended up happening over the course of the week was life happened, anxiety came along, flared up for her, and she ended up eating food that she normally wouldn't have eaten instead. She ended up eating carbohydrates. She didn't drink any alcohol, but she ended up eating pizza and eating pizza crust, which she doesn't even like. And she said to me, like, why am I doing this? So I pointed out to her two things. One is that the willpower muscle, the thing we think we always don't have enough of, and that's what we need, like that's the solution to the problem, that muscle gets exhausted after a while. And so that's what happened for her, right? She was using the willpower to kind of muscle her way through the week. It got exhausted. So she got to this point where her brain was like, anxiety, anxiety, anxiety. And she needed to feel less of that. So she chose to consume another food. I like to think of it as this. Whenever we activate our willpower, we're like telling ourselves no. But then what our brain chooses to do in response to that is to act out like complete and utter rebellion. I think of it like this, like my toddler sometimes.
Exactly.
Totally, right? She does not want to eat her vegetables. And I'm like, eat your vegetables. But she's like, cake seems like a good idea right now, right? She's just like, I want cake. Lately, it's cheesies, which are not even real cheesies, by the way. They're those like vegetable sticks, but cheesies. I want cheesies. Well, no, you can't eat cheesies three times a day. So what happens within our brain when we do this is we create like this disparity, right? We split, we become both the person telling us, no, we can't have this thing. And we also become the toddler kicking and screaming saying, we want this. And those two sides of our brain fight against each other. And it creates this situation where most of the time we feel so negatively that we choose to give in and we buffer the negative emotion. So what I showed her was that there's sort of a few different problems going on here, right? One is this idea of restriction and using our willpower. And so we talked about the fact that maybe she could apply this mindset that any food, if she wanted to allow, say, for instance, if she wanted to allow alcohol, not a food, but in this case, we're talking particularly about alcohol. If she wanted to allow it, what she could do was make pre-planned exceptions so that she could use her prefrontal cortex and not her primitive brain to program when she was going to consume alcohol. This gives her back 100% of the control. She's not answering an urge with alcohol anymore. She's learning how to drink it in a way that it's no longer a buffer for her. It's no longer that she's only going to drink it when she feels this overwhelming need to drink something, so she didn't feel this emotion anymore. The second piece of the puzzle is then what do we do with the emotion when it comes up? And so I taught her some techniques for emotional processing, which the way I think about this really is just about going into our physical body and recognizing like what does an emotion feel like in my body. So we spent some time just talking about what her experience of the anxiety is like. We thought about a situation this week where she'd had it and then she physically started to feel it, and we worked through processing the anxiety and what that felt like for her. Then the third piece of this is knowing that she has this pattern of buffering emotions with food, is working on allowing a space for herself to feel the urge that comes, which is a little bit different, sort of like an emotion, but it's a little bit different in the sense that the urge is what we feel when we really just want that food. When we're like, I don't even know why it is that I want this so bad. That's the urge. That's just that desire to have the food. So we talked about how we can start to process that. So we look at processing the urges. We look at processing the emotions that we're trying to avoid by buffering. And then we take this third piece of the puzzle and we learn how, if we're going to consume these kind of things that are triggers for us, how can we move this into our prefrontal cortex, our most sophisticated part of our brain, so we're making decisions about it versus it being a primitive brain thing where we're just at the beck and call of whatever our primitive brain wants to tell us to do.
Yep, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you know that my phrase is always, it's, you know, it's not willpower, it's skill power, right? And it's like, these are some of the skills that you need to do, that the analysis of how your brain is working, your patterns around why you've used food the way that you do, you know, childhood things even are really ingrained in these patterns. So it's more than just, you know, what do I need to eat and when do I need to eat it? It's really getting the skills kind of in analyzing your own brain and analyzing your life and figuring out what it is that you want and doing some uncomfortable work. that's why what I think what we're doing kind of as a team at Holist is just really so life-changing, is most people don't have the opportunity to learn these kind of things about how their brain works. And it's so, like, I mean, you know, people getting better jobs, leaving relationships, setting boundaries, like, it's so much more than just how we're feeding ourselves. It's really learning to value ourselves and, you know, understanding how we work. And sometimes totally. We don't learn that till we're 40, 50, 60 years old, you know?
Totally. And, you know, on that note, I love this. This is an exercise that I learned from Brooke Castillo at the Life Coach School, but this is a fun one to do too, right? Is to draw your life on like a linear scale from 0 to 100. And so I give everybody the benefit of the doubt and say, well, you could live until 100 because medical care is advancing and, you know, COVID notwithstanding, you in theory could live until 100, right? So mark off where you are on that scale, right? Whatever your age is, even if you're 60, 65 years old. And then think about like the first, you know, 20 years of your life, you were in school or you were a child. And so someone was pretty much controlling your life and telling you what you should do. So you can mark your life off from 20 till 60. And that 40 years of your life has gone by, okay? But then if you're 60, and if you're going to live until 100, you've got 40 years left. And those years could be the absolute best years of your life in terms of your health, in terms of whatever goal you want to accomplish. It's so fun to step into that future. And I think this is really useful when it comes to mindset and weight loss too, because I tell my clients, like, think about what that version of yourself in 2 years from now that doesn't have drama around food and doesn't buffer with food anymore, like, what would she or he say to you about the choices you're making now? How would they advise you? What would they tell you is hard? What would they tell you to stay away from? What would they tell you to lean into? Because it's going to be so much better in a few months from now if you lean into this. And just consulting with that future version of ourselves is so powerful. And all of this change and all of our success lives in the future. Every time we look to our past to define whether or not we're going to be able to achieve this or whether or not we're going to be able to do what we want to do, we stay stagnant and we stay stuck. It's not the place where we can create this different version of ourselves that we believe can do something else with our lives.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, two of my grandparents lived to 100, so I'm totally there.
Ha, there you go. See, you got to be dreaming big for what you're going to do with those years.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, any last minute thoughts for us before we wrap up?
No, I think I've said my spiel. This was very fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was really great. We please stay tuned for wherever you listen to your podcast, to subscribe so you don't miss any of these. You can always read more about Dr. Anna Blake on www.holisthealth.com. Can you also let us know where they can find you on social media, especially our female physicians who need you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I always accept friend requests on Facebook from female physicians. So Anna Blake, you can friend me, you can jump into my Facebook group, which is called Anti-Fragile Female Physicians, Living the Lives We Work Hard For. And certainly you can always reach me on my website, which is currently www.antifragilefemalemd.com, although it's going to be changing soon, but I'll make sure that gets forwarded over to the new link.
Yep, and we'll put that in the show notes. So, and as always, who you choose to be matters. You are valuable, you are worth this, and you are your whole you. Till next time.